Good morning, Little Saigon. This is your friend Dan, and it is the morning time. It's early as fuck. I haven't really been in the mood to do podcasts with the regularity that many of you have gotten used to while I was unemployed. I understand this. I know it's upsetting to some of you, and I say this in jest, but I'm doing the best I can. I have to say that working as a computer programmer at Willy Wonka's software factory or any of the software factories you end up working at can just suck your soul dry. At least it sucks my soul dry. And I'm just sitting here drinking my coffee. It's 4:40 in the morning. It's 4:40 in the morning. My alarm goes off at 5:20. I woke up extra early in the hope that I would have the mojo to do a decent podcast, and maybe I will. I have a list of items. I think I've already covered one of them, but I don't know. I was on the bus last week, and I think I told you about the 545. This is the 545 to Redmond. Anyways, I was taking the 545, and I think it was Thursday or Friday. It probably was Friday. And the little LED light on the outside and the inside wasn't working, so the bus driver could not display the number of the bus. And so people came up to the bus driver because, again, when you're standing down there, near frickin' Jackson Street and whatever, Fifth Avenue, Fourth Avenue, blah blah blah. When you're standing down there waiting for your bus, you want to get on the bus. You want to get out of there. It's not exactly the nicest place to hang out. Lots of vehicles going by, lots of the detritus and the dust and the garbage of the city being spun up by people driving. It just isn't a great place to hang out. Okay? Whatever you want to say about it, not a great place to hang out. So you want to get on the frickin' bus and get to work. Not so much that you want to be at work, but you don't want to be in that place. And so this bus pulls up and it has no number on it. So a woman goes up to the bus driver pensively, tentatively, in a very careful way, and she says, "Is this the 545?" And the bus driver, who was obviously trying to work on her light, she kind of angrily snapped back, "This is the 545." And so the woman gets on. And a couple other people come up to the bus and they say, "Is this the 545?" And the bus driver is busy looking for whatever button or switch or Gomulus or frickin' key card or whatever the fuck she needs to turn on the fucking light. And so she snaps back quickly, "This is the 545. This is the 545 to Redmond." And the people get on board. And so we all just get on board the bus. And a couple more times in an angry way, she goes on the PA system and she says, "This is the 545 to Redmond," and we pull away. And every bus stop after that, she pulled over and she'd say, "This is the 545 to Redmond. This is the 545 to Redmond." So, I don't know what to tell you, but it's not so much about the bus drivers, just that, things don't always work these days. You just should, expect the worst and be happily overjoyed when normal things occur. If you spend your day being upset about shit not working, about lights on your bus not turning on, 2019 is going to be a tough year for you, buddy. But if you spend your day accepting the fact that a lot of shit that used to work is not going to work any longer, and when it does work, you should simply be happy, and when it doesn't work, don't be disappointed. That's the philosophy of 2019, you fuck. Next topic. So, I have a bullet point that says, "I've seen shitty code," and again, I'm trying to make better notes of the things, the weird ideas that come to me, but this one can go different directions. As you all probably or maybe know or may not know, I am professionally a computer programmer. Some people call themselves full stack developers or software engineers. I don't give a fuck. Whatever you call yourself at this point, if you edit, you know, little bits and bytes of code that go into a machine to tell it what to do, you're a computer programmer. I don't give a fuck if you're writing JavaScript. I don't care if you're creating web pages. I don't give a shit whatever pipelines you build or you go into fucking Azure Cloud and create a fucking ARM template. You are a computer programmer. You may do it declaratively. You may do it procedurally. And if you don't understand what I just said and you program computers, yeah. Okay. If you don't know the difference between a procedural language and a declarative language and you program computers, then that's a whole nother topic for another day. But I've seen a lot of shitty code. I have to be honest with you. I've seen way more shitty code than good code. You know, there are these, I don't want to say acronyms, but these abbreviations that are popular now, actually they are acronyms that are really popular in software now. It's solid code and stupid code. And I don't want to go into what the solid stands for, the stupid stands for. But the bottom line is, every few years, some really smart, brilliant fucking genius comes along to tell us that our code sucks. And I'm not going to be that guy. A lot of the code is what it is because, you know, it developed over time. People needed to solve a problem. And even great programmers write shitty code. We all do sometimes. You know, we do things to get through a certain point. We say, yes, there's an elegant solution, but I'm going to do the one that works. And the thing is, I've seen so much shitty code that I'm actually surprised things work as often as they do. If you just consider how complex society has become and how dependent upon computers our society has become, then all that shitty code out there really should worry people, but it doesn't. I have to say, every time I hear about some security breach, like, hey, somebody stole, you know, 100,000 accounts. It doesn't surprise me. This is an example. Excuse me. This is an example of something that does not surprise me. I am not surprised when some major credit card company or the IRS, you know, has an announcement that they've lost a bunch of accounts. Okay, I am far more surprised when the software works because I've seen it. Anyways, I just thought that would make you feel better. Next topic, you know, it occurred to me that if there are evil forces in the universe or in the United States or in the world today that want to sort of control us or kill us or whatever, that the ultimate disease for them, the perfect disease, like if there really is a deep state cabal or an international group that wants to liquidate most of the human race, you know, per the guidance of the Georgia Guidestones, take us down to 500 million, you know, good manageable 500 million worldwide. Well, there are probably lots of nifty ways of doing that, including global thermonuclear war. But, you know, if they were going to do the disease route, I thought, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be just wonderful for them if they could create a virus or a bacteria that kills you, okay? And in some kind of weird way, like, I don't know, a fucked up rabies, where it reprograms your brain to just want to sit on the toilet and essentially poop yourself out. Like literally, you'll sit on the toilet and you'll liquefy, and this is the disease that flushes itself down the toilet. So essentially, most people just go down the toilet. They liquefy down the toilet. That's how the disease works. And the people that run the world are happy because everyone has flushed themselves down the toilet. I don't know. This may not be as funny in retrospect as it seemed at the time. But I do think that would be the horrific, you know, evil Bond villain disease. You know, the disease that it just doesn't kill you, but it kills you in a really clean and just polite way. The disease has you go to the bathroom, you know, and either liquefy inside the bathtub, which seems the most efficient, that you just liquefy in the bathtub and go down the tub, or you simply, the disease that flushes itself down the toilet. Yeah, that's pretty messed up. The next topic. Ha ha ha, next topic. And it's like almost 5 a.m. Fuck. I am really doing my best, folks, to be on my A game at 5 a.m. before I have to go to work, before Memorial Day weekend, whatever the hell that means. Next topic, reality porn. So I will admit something that the Lord in heaven knows, and that I'm sure, you know, isn't, you know, necessarily that original. I have never paid for online pornography. I will say this up front. I've never paid for it. I've never given a credit card to a porno site, at least not to my knowledge. If I did, it was so many years ago I forgot, and usually I have a good memory of these things. I've never done that. I think once I did order a porno film at a hotel, you know, a long time ago, but I've never actually paid for online porn, and I think it's been many decades since I bought like one of those nudie magazines. So in general, I don't pay for porn, but I have to be honest, I have watched online porn. My categories tend to be rather banal, you know, busty women, that's kind of my thing. But the bottom line is, even if it is banal, I'm sure the Lord in heaven doesn't like it. I'm sure that it would be better if I didn't, and I'm working on it. It's one of those sins I work on. But, you know, if you've seen any online porn, then you've probably been to places like Pornhub or other aggregator porn sites, free sites, and you've seen the categories. And one of the categories for porn these days, along with, you know, tentacle porn and Takiguchi or whatever, fucking all the crap they have, with all the categories that they have, you know, one of the categories they have is reality porn. And I find it funny because the reality porn is so not real. It's like, it is the classic case of, oh, you know, I'm at home and I'm really beautiful and sexy, and some beautiful and sexy dude comes over who isn't wearing underwear, and he accidentally trips and we start, you know, having sex. This is the, and I just described the more real of the reality porn. Like, there's a category of reality porn, but if you look at it, there's nothing real about it. It never happens, at least not to real people I know. And I don't know. If it did happen to me, I don't know how I would feel about it. You know, people have these fantasies about sex, and they think of sex in terms of just the pleasure itself, like what pleasure it gives me. But they don't really think about the consequences that often. In fact, we live in kind of a social arrangement at this point when it comes to sex, that the consequences have been, we've been convinced that there are no consequences, that sex is literally at this point a meaningless act. Well, we all know that's bullshit, and we should know that's bullshit. You know, whether or not it's true that they've conquered all the STDs, which I think is false, I still think even if they've conquered AIDS and herpes and syphilis and gonorrhea, I still think you can get crabs. So the bottom line is, you know, sex has consequences, but they try to convince us that it doesn't. And so this reality porn only makes sense in the consequence-free world of sex. It makes sense because there is no third act. You know, there's just the middle act. There's just the act itself, but there is no third act. There is no, you know, you don't see another, you know, series of clips where you see some woman knocking on a guy's door and saying, "Hey, honey, I got a secret for you. You know, I'm late." And they talk about how she's pregnant. That never comes up in reality porn. You know, no matter how many times you see them have sex without condoms, it never comes up in reality porn that people get pregnant. Or that, oh, shit, I have gonorrhea. I have syphilis. Oh, fuck. I have crabs. You never see the subject of crabs come up in reality porn, but I'm just convinced that people probably do end up getting crabs. So, yeah. Next subject that is not reality porn related, but I hope that, yeah. So I've talked about Mount St. Helens before, and of course last weekend we had the great holiday of Mount St. Helens. May 18th, 1980, right? 1980. May 18th, 1980. Isn't that it? Let me double check here, because I just fucking, I don't want to give you bad data. Mount St. Up the crack. Google butthole search. Yeah, it was, fuck. May 18th, 1980, like I said. Fuck. That's great news. Anyways, I have mentioned Harry Truman, not the president Harry Truman, but the old codger. The old codger that lived there up on Mount St. Helens back in 1980 and refused to leave. It's like, I lived on this mountain my whole life. I've been here my whole life. I have been living this way and being this way. And this is my life, you know? So don't you dare tell me to leave. Don't you dare tell me to leave my home here on Mount St. Helens. And in some ways, this is kind of related to me coming back to Seattle. I don't really have great expectations for Seattle. I feel like Seattle, like so many of these last surviving, last dwelling places of the developed world where people think things are normal, it really is kind of a little bastion. And as such, you know, the dark forces are encroaching upon it. I don't think the economic situation of Seattle or the tech West Coast or any of the other places that really did well under the free money economy, I don't think they're going to do well. But the question is, when does the shoe drop? And I really don't know. And I really don't care. Every day of normal at this point is fine with me. I'm happy with it. But when I moved back here, I kind of knew that I was going to be at kind of ground zero of a lot of sociological economic turmoil. I knew it was going to happen. For the simple fact that it doesn't really matter how rich people are in Seattle now. Some people are quite rich. What really hurts people is the drop in altitude. You know, that it's not a question of whether they'll still have money when they hit the ground. The question is, can they survive the impact psychologically? A lot of people are going to experience a massive descent in wealth in a very short period of time. A lot of people will find out that their million-dollar home is worth maybe $100,000, or just as bad, that their million-dollar home might be worth $10 million, but guess what? You know, $1 million buys you a cup of coffee. So it's either some type of rapid, catastrophic deflation, which frankly I think would be better than more inflation or hyperinflation. But in either case, they're going to wake up to find out that their shit is really just worth shit. That all their stock portfolios of tech companies like Facebook and Apple and you name it is really just shit. That Amazon is more cancer than corporation. They'll wake up to realize these things, and they'll find out that their 401k and their pension funds and all the other things they depend upon reflect the reality. That day comes, people are going to start going really crazy. So when I came back to Seattle about, you know, almost 2 years ago, I realized I was coming back to a place that probably would implode at some point sociologically. A lot of people just will not be able to take what's about to happen. They won't be able to process it. In their heads, it'll be like, but aren't we the woolly-headed, decent, liberal, fuzzy, unicorn, rainbow people of Seattle? Aren't we safe from the evil orcs of reality? And the answer is, fuck no. When the evil orcs come, they're going to scale the walls. It's going to be like you're in Constantinople in 1453, you fuck. But what's worse, unlike Constantinople, but very much in line with that famous quote from the Spanish Civil War, there will be four columns outside Madrid and a fifth column within. Listen, it's the fifth column. It's the people inside of Seattle who are going to destroy it. The people that don't even realize it yet. The people that won't be able to accept the rapid descent from believing they're living in a wonderland of Disney, hypertech, Ray Kurzweil, in 20 years will shove nanites up your butt reality to something quite different. So yeah, I do feel like Harry Truman in a way, I kind of understand his perspective. He lived on that mountain his whole life. It didn't matter that that mountain was about to reject him, was about to explode, was about to throw him into the stratosphere. It was his home. It was his home, his cat's home, his wife's home. It was his fucking home. And when I came back to Seattle, even though technically I wasn't born here, I was born 60 miles north of here. When I came back here 2 years ago, I realized I was coming here, maybe even to die, but I was coming here to spend time with people I loved in the time of normalcy we have left. And we don't have a lot left. It could be a day, a year, a week. I do not believe it's another decade, but I could be wrong. But whatever you think is normal, whatever normality you think is still there, is rapidly slipping away. And yeah, it might not literally be like Mount St. Helens. There might not be some major seismological, catastrophic, volcanic eruption, although that could happen too. I was looking at the Economist cover for 2019, and that little picture that looked like Mount Rainier, that little icon in the upper right-hand corner, it kind of got me worried. I was thinking, holy crap, are they doing predictive programming? We're about to tell you the kind of crap we're going to shove up your butt again? Maybe. Maybe they're telling us. Maybe they're telegraphing. The people that, you know, the quote-unquote people that run the world, the ones that basically work for the crocodile, the ones that work for the crocodile and work for Satan, that's kind of how they operate. So I don't know. But yeah, I'm Harry Truman, you know, and not the president, the dude on Mount St. Helens. And like Harry Truman, you know what? This may not be the Seattle I remember, and it may be turning to shit, and it may be rapidly filling with douchebags, and it may suffer a sociological implosion, but I'll be here when it happens, and I'm okay with that. I skipped church on Sunday. I did. I skipped church. I try not to. Church helps me. I don't care if you're a Christian or an atheist. It's up to you. I do kind of care if you understand the value of human liberty and human dignity, because to me, that should be the language of rational people. But I don't really personally care too much. Hold on a second. Hold on. Okay, so yeah. I had to pause there for a second. I got a new digital recorder, a Zoom H4N Pro, and so I'm still getting used to it, and its buttons. It's got a lot more buttons than my Tascam. And by the way, my little Tascam served me well, and I still have it. But I needed something that could support 4-channel. I'm going to try to start doing more podcasts where I go out and interview people. And so I needed something where I could set up a little podcast interview rather quickly. So yeah, I got this new digital recorder. And I don't know. I truly could be fucking it up right now. But I just, you know, I had the window open. And the birds are chirping. And I realized that this fucker, this new recorder of mine, is so fucking sensitive. It was probably picking up the bird chirps, and so I closed the window. I hope I didn't ruin 20 minutes. I don't think I did. We'll find out in Audacity. But yeah, I skipped church. I try not to skip church. I skipped church. I really don't know what to say. I am a man of faith. I believe in God. I endeavor to be a good Christian. That's not such an easy thing to do. And lots of people call themselves Christians. How many good Christians there are? You know, I don't even want to venture to do the math. I remember doing the napkin estimates on the number of people left alive in this country 50 years from now. And I have a little document out there on my website, if you're interested, that goes through the napkin estimates. But I don't really want to do the estimate of Christians. Actual real Christians, people living according to what Christ wanted us to do, to be, living according to Christ's vision of humanity. How many Christians are there? I really don't know. And that also gets into the area of judgment. Like, is it my place to even have an opinion? Is it my place to, you know, speak on this issue? I really don't. These are questions I ponder. I do. But I skip church. When I was a kid, and I think I went over this before, but when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, and my brothers and sisters, a lot of us were kind of teenagers at the same time. Not all of us, but a group of us were. And we would tell them, we would tell our mom and dad, oh, we're going to go to later church, because we used to go to Mass, to Catholic Mass, really early on Sunday. Like, my dad, he had to be at Catholic Mass, 8 o'clock Mass. I mean, who the fuck wakes up at 6 a.m. to go to church on Sunday? My dad used to. Then again, he was a logger, and he had logger's hours, which, interestingly enough, because of my new job, which is OLAP, which, if you know what OLAP is, online analytical processing, you know that you should never have to do 24/7 support for OLAP, and yet I find myself involved in a 24/7 support scheme. Yeah, that's where I'm at with the OLAP situation. Anyways, I'm going to turn off my alarm here really quick. It's going to go off at 5:20, and I really don't want to hear it go off at 5:20, so I'm going to turn it off in the hope that I can just turn it back on again, which I will. I will remember to turn it back on. I promise to. And here's the thing. As a Christian, as a person, human being, imperfect, I realize I'm going to do things like miss church. It's going to happen. And it's not the end of the world. I mean, I don't think Jesus Christ runs a zero tolerance scheme. Yes, there are many, many places you can work these days, especially places like Willy Wonka's Software Factory, where there are zero defect philosophies. You know, nothing can be wrong. The problem with nothing can be wrong philosophies is it tends to create an environment where people hide shit. Okay? It's like, if nothing can be wrong, then don't tell people things are wrong. I was watching this shockumentary, this drama news series bullshit about Chernobyl. And listen, it seemed pretty accurate. But I was watching it, and the sort of, in it, you know, and I don't know tons about Chernobyl. I know that, you know, about the incident. I know when it happened. I was 16 when it happened. But I've never really researched it to any depth. But it all made sense. I mean, the guy running the plant basically didn't want to hear anything negative, to the point that he jeopardized the lives of millions of people. And he lived in a society, you know, the Soviet Union at the time, where telling people negative shit probably got you in trouble. We're telling, hey, you know, this doesn't work. Well, comrade, make it work. Comrade, why can't you take the grombus and turn it into a schlombus? Don't you have the Marxist magic of Lenin, you know, running through your fucking veins, you fuck? Well, guess what? There are a lot of places in the United States these days that are exactly fucking like that. In fact, corporate America, in most places in America now, is kind of like the Soviet Union. Yeah, is it a better run Soviet Union? Yeah, definitely. I mean, go to fucking Willy Wonka's corporate campus over in Redmond. Fuck. So many magical little cafeterias and their shuttle service. It isn't dark and dreary. There's not a lot of that 1960s and 70s Soviet architecture with all the crap from their two-stroke engine cars sort of, you know, blending into the paint and the patina of fucking crazy-ass concrete statues of Lenin bullshit. No, it's a pretty campus and people playing soccer and going to get their cafeteria food and having different restaurants provide Indian food, like that Himalayan, you know, comfort food. The Indian food tastes so good. Okay, so yes, it's a well-run Soviet Union, but it's like the Soviet Union nonetheless. It really is. And empires that succeed can extract a lot of wealth. And we've extracted a lot of wealth. So we here in the United States, as imperial citizens, we live pretty well. You know, and places like Willy Wonka's factory, they live even better than a lot of people. I don't know. So anyways, next topic. I have this note about software gigs. So the last 10 years, over the last 10 years, I would say that most of the software gigs I've been involved in fall into one of two categories. Oh, who the fuck is texting me now? Oh, okay, there we go. Yeah, so over the last 10 years, the software gigs I've worked, the places I've worked fall into two fucking categories. And I mean this. They're either, GRQ, get rich quick schemes. And I got involved in some get rich quick schemes. Everyone does. I mean, they'll call them startups. They'll call them, token projects or coin projects. They'll call them many things. I mean, oh, I'm disruptive tech, and we got a three-person team, and we got this new fucking website or app that will fucking collate your colon and all kinds of bullshit. But the point is, one of the categories of work, and the two basic categories I've been exposed to in the last decade, especially since the great financial crisis, are all these GRQs. And some of the GRQs get quite big, like Uber and Lyft or Tesla. These are all GRQs, get rich quick. They probably end up failing. They are schemes, okay? You can tell this to Elon Musk, that fuck, but they're GRQs. Now, of course, none of the GRQs I've been involved in you would have ever heard of because they didn't succeed. So I didn't succeed in extracting massive rentier wealth from all of you. I could have created some app that charged you 5 cents a minute for fucking, pretending that you're going to date some person in Central Asia that really doesn't live in Toledo. So no, I'm not there. I did not succeed. But if I had succeeded, I would have been like those people, and I don't know. I'd probably be dead from an overdose or something, because that world just seems so evil at this point. That's one category of the last 10 years. The other category of work in the last 10 years, especially the contract work in the Seattle area, is the all hands on deck chaos. That's it. Those are the categories of work as a programmer I have seen in the last 10 years. Get rich quick. And I don't mean entrepreneurship. I'm a big believer in actual free enterprise and actual entrepreneurship. I'm talking about the current crony fucking economics, where people develop their get rich quick models around extraction of wealth rather than creation of wealth. There's a big fucking difference between creating something that people want to buy that adds value and extracting rentier wealth, extracting wealth from people fractionally for doing basically bullshit. And most of the crap out there is bullshit. It is supported by a free money economy. Listen, I hate to break it to you, but Amazon Corporation is a bag of hot air. If you suck out the government largesse, if you suck out all the free money for stock buybacks and weird stock schemes, if you suck out all the crony bullshit from Amazon, that fucking tent implodes upon itself. So we live in a fucked up situation. So yeah, there's get rich quick, and then there's all hands on deck. And all hands on deck is everywhere now in Seattle. If you're a contractor and you think you showed up at a gig where they said, "Listen, it's crazy right now," this is the speech you'll get. Almost every fucking contract job you get, especially if it's at Willy Wonka's. But it doesn't matter. Willy Wonka's, Amazon, Facebook, fucking Google. I don't care where you go as a contractor, a contractor slave whore in the hooker democracy of Seattle. I don't care where you go. It's mostly all hands on deck. It's crazy. It's crazy, Dan, but it's only going to be crazy for a short time. And here's the thing. I know that when someone tells me it's only going to be crazy for a short time, that they might be inadvertently honest at that moment, telling me the truth. I also know that when things are less crazy, you get canned. Especially if you're an old fuck. And I'll admit it, I'm an old fuck now. It doesn't matter if I know how to program. It's irrelevant that I'm good at my job. This is not a fucking free enterprise situation, folks. This is way more like the Soviet Union, just a better run Soviet Union, okay? We're a slightly better run Soviet state, but we're not a free economy. So these all hands on deck scenarios, this is what you get. This is the dirty slop. And yeah, do I get paid well? Listen, compared to most fucking people these days, compared to the bullshit that a lot of people have to put up with, compared to a working mom who has to work three jobs just to survive and probably take some of her kids Ritalin because that's the only way she can work the three jobs. I got to tell you something, compared to most of the world where people are getting by on the dirtiest water and the nastiest food you can imagine, I live quite well. We all here in the United States of America live quite fucking well. But yeah, the other major category are these all hands on deck. And I, guess what? In this new contract job of mine, I airdropped into one of those situations. I you know, airdropped out of my C-130 and I did my PLF and I landed on the ground. And for those of you who've never been to airborne school, a PLF is a parachute landing fall, whatever. And there I was at Willy Wonka's. And immediately, Dan, it's crazy. We've got version one of the giant snake, and we have version two of the giant snake. And we have to manage version one and two of the giant snake. And there's going to be a version three giant snake, and it consumes all data, and it poops out data, and it's amazing. And we just need you to help us through this craziness. But it'll be less crazy, Dan. In a few months, once we get through all this noise and all this chaos, all hands on deck, it'll be less crazy. And it's been my experience, no matter how earnest your manager is. And listen, I like my team right now. I like the people I'm working with. I mean, it's not perfect. You got personality issues everywhere you go. But for the most part, I'm on a pretty decent team right now. I don't like Willy Wonka's, but Willy Wonka's is, listen, folks, I went through my fucking, I don't know what to call it, my maelstrom of 2017, and I survived. I did not drown myself in the White River. I came to Seattle like Harry Truman to spend my last days on the top of the volcano. So I accept where I'm at, folks. I accept I'm living on the volcano, going to Uncle Ike's, getting my fucking Scooby snack panda candies, and surviving this shit as best I can. But everywhere I go now, it really is. It's either the get rich quick, which I'm through with, okay? I want to be an entrepreneur. I do not want to be a wealth extractor in a crony economy. I'm sorry. If you think that Uber and Lyft are a sign of the future, no. They're a sign that wealth extraction has reached its maximal point, that basically the economics of financialization and wealth extraction are, I really do think, are reaching their maxima. They're, you know, maybe it's a local maxima, but I really think they are. And I don't think it can get much worse, but it might. It might. But in that circumstance, the get rich quick does not appeal to me. It is a bunch of crony bullshit, people pretending to be entrepreneurs. They're pretending to be, you know, fucking John Galt, when in reality, they're just another fucking shady character. One of the ugly, shady characters from Atlas Shrugged. They're not a hero. And then the other category is the holy fuck, Dan. You know, you just arrived, but the giant hippopotamus that consumes data from the 50 different orcs, it's got all kinds of spleenus, and we need to clean up the spleenus and clean up the glymph and go into Git and update the source code and maybe rebase the dbase. And once you're done, you're going to want a freebase. And yeah. It's all chaos. It's either get rich quick or chaos. Those are your options as a computer programmer, at least in my demographic in 2019. You can participate in a pyramid scheme, or you can end up contracting for one of the giant megacorps in one chaos project after another. And when the chaos project actually stabilizes, that's when you'll find out a month or two later that you're no longer needed. And that's okay to the extent that, like I said, I'm at peace with it. I am living on the volcano. If you live on the volcano and some scientist tells you it could explode, you have a choice. You either listen to the scientist and you move, or you stay. But even if you stay, you can still accept the truth of the scientist. I accept the truth of my reality. Everything around me is past its shelf life. It stinks. Maybe not in the literal sense, but in the figurative sense. It stinks. Everything has a smell to it. Like, wait a minute, this is off. This is, oh yeah, I was supposed to drink this 30 years ago. This is no longer good. Everything is like rotten milk. So I'm not really, you know, I'm not going to spend all fucking day on this. I just wanted to point out that if you want to ask me why my work sucks the fucking life out of me so I can't do my proper podcast for you special people, well, it sucks the life out of me because it's life-sucking bullshit. Next topic. But it's related. So Willy Wonka's, and I do believe this is related to financialization and the sort of the investor-driven business, but Willy Wonka's, for about a week every month, and you need to think about this. In my opinion, Willy Wonka's wastes at least 25% of their resources every single month on what's called scorecard. And scorecard, it probably means what it sounds like to you. It's essentially a reporting activity where all the groups tell Willy Wonka, all the Smurfs in Smurfland, tell Papa Smurf how things are going at Willy Wonka's. And as an Oompa Loompa, I'm expected to do my job in helping the Smurfs prepare the scorecard shit. But here's the deal. It's crazy. I think 25% of their resources are currently being consumed by an activity that instead of done monthly, should be done quarterly. But I know why it's done monthly. I know why. Because the system is so fucking fragile now. The system is so fucking fragile. The stock price hot button buzzer is so connected to the spinal cord of these corporations that they have to, on a day-to-day basis, respond to the market. So they can't wait 3 months to tell people how things are doing. They gotta tell the Mr. Market every fucking 15 minutes how Willy Wonka's is doing, how the giant snake is doing. Hey, did you guys fix the Coastalizer yet? We want to go out on the town. Every fucking month they go through this. And I know it may seem like an exaggeration, but I would be willing to bet that 25% of their time, resources, energy, every fucking month is for a scorecard. And I got to tell you, when you reach a point as an organization where your principal output is reporting on the state of your organization, or at least not principal, but when a major fractional output is simply telling people the state of your situation, then it seems a lot like Sixth Army, you know, the German Sixth Army von Paulus at Stalingrad. One single operations order in May of 1942 launched the second summer offensive into southern Russia. It was called Plan Blue. One operations order lasted, I think, about 4 months. The change order to that, okay, I think lasted a few weeks. The order that came after that lasted a few days. You see where this is fucking going. And by the time you get to Stalingrad, okay, late 42, you have the German army issuing change orders every few hours. This is not a sign of success. If your organization is reporting, and probably is, this is the point, pretty much every fucking major corporation, this is not special to Willy Wonka, every major corporation probably goes through scorecard madness now, because every major corporation is in a crony fucking economy, an economic situation not unlike Stalingrad. And so, yeah, we're always reporting. Why? Because we have to. We either do it or we die. This is Stalingrad. Our situation is not tenable. Okay, this fucked up financialized economy is not tenable. And all of these corporations depend upon it. They depend upon Mr. Market telling them everything is fucking okay. Everything isn't okay. These corporate bonds, okay, are unpayable. All this debt to buy back stock is unpayable. And guess what? No matter how powerful the Federal Reserve is, there are people called bond vigilantes, there are people out there that can force the market to raise interest rates. So it doesn't fucking matter if the Federal Reserve wants to keep interest rates low. It doesn't matter if we want to print money. Interest rates will go up, or, and the alternative is this, every central bank is now in collusion. And that could be true too. Like if every central bank and every major financial institution, because central banks are really just cartels, and if all the banking cartels are now in collusion, then maybe they can keep the bullshit going. I don't know. But scorecard madness seems like a waste of time. Next topic. And I probably have to take a shower soon, so I got to get to editing this soon. Did you see the video of Schwarzenegger getting kicked in the back of the head by that dude. I think it was in South Africa or something. Did you see that video? What the fuck? And what's funny is that if, okay, so let's imagine for the sake of argument that it wasn't Schwarzenegger. It was like Samuel L. Jackson or Denzel Washington. And they're, you know, hanging out at like some baseball stadium in the Midwest. And some weird white guy comes up and kicks them in the back of the head. It kind of makes you wonder, because I think it, I don't know. I don't know the ethnicity of the person that hit, you know, Schwarzenegger with his kick, drop kick. But it looked like they might be South African and not, you know, Afrikaner. So, yeah, it seems to me it's like a hate crime. But it's not. If you kick the old white man in the back of the head, it's just funny. I don't know. I don't know. And maybe the dude that did this was actually an Afrikaner. Maybe he was a white dude. But the whole thing looked like one of these examples of where it really is okay now. It's totally okay to harm people as long as you think that they're guilty of historic crimes. And I don't mean personally. Like, I have never personally owned slaves. My ancestors fled Ireland, probably in the 1840s and 50s. So I have never been a slave owner. There's no evidence in my history of our family having much wealth, except for the brief time that my grandfather was basically running whiskey from the Canadian border down to the U.S. during Prohibition. Other than that, I don't have any evidence that my family has any historic wealth from any type of abuses of peoples, selling of slaves or whatever. But the basic argument of the reparations people is that the mere fact that I'm white, I'm really ginger. That's another thing too. White people don't accept me as white, but fuck you. And the mere fact that I'm a ginger, which for many still says I'm white, whatever these colors mean, means I am guilty. I am guilty of the crimes because I got the benefits. I am here in my apartment in Little Saigon. It has the dimensions of a large bathroom. All my belongings basically fit into a few bags, but somehow I've reaped a majestic pile of wealth from being white. And I will say, relative to most of the planet, as crappy as my existence is, it's pretty fucking good. But I wouldn't say, come on over, people, and steal my stuff because you deserve it. There's nothing to steal. There's nothing. You could clear me out in about 5 minutes. I mean, maybe 5 seconds. And as far as money goes, my money goes to food, water, and shelter. Yeah, you know, eventually I'll probably start stacking cash and hiding it, but I'm certainly not going to hide it in the bank. So anyways, good luck. Good luck trying to extract wealth from me. I am a stone that has almost no blood left. But I did think it was funny to drop kick the Schwarzenegger. I thought it was messed up. I could be wrong about the ethnicity or race of the assailant or the guy who kicked him in the head or drop kicked him. But it was fucked up. Abortion. So Alabama has a strict abortion law now. I think that the governor signed it. So I think it's the law of the land until some, you know, judge in some court turns it over. And you guys all well know I am an anarchist, and there's no asterisk. I'm a Christian, no asterisk. So when I tell you these things about the law, I know the law is bullshit. I also know the crocodile is bullshit. But the crocodile of Alabama has an abortion law. And here's the thing, the crocodile loves fucking with you. Okay? The crocodile will publish an article in the New York Times saying, there are too many people using too much, according to the now deceased great scientist, frickin' blah, 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 we would need 3 or 4 Earths to support us, blah, blah, blah. Okay, they will publish an article telling you there's not enough stuff for everybody. And then in the very next fucking breath, the very next day, they'll publish an article saying, America has a population crisis. We need more people. We gotta ship in people from other places. And then the next day, it's too many people. We need abortion. There's too many people. And then the next day after that, oh, we don't have enough people. The fucking crocodile loves to fuck with you, is my point. One day the crocodile will tell you, don't have babies. The next day the crocodile will tell you, oh, have babies. You should have babies. The abortion thing, in my view, has almost nothing to do with population control and everything to do with the objectification of life. It's another act of Satan. It is a satanic thing. It's a ritual, okay? Abortion is a ritual. Now, does that mean there is never, ever a case where a baby dies as, you know, as a result of trying to protect a mother, for example? Babies die. People die. Mothers die. And I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's wrong. It happens. What I will tell you is this. I don't want a law against abortion because I'm an anarchist. I don't want any fucking laws. I am way more consistent than the fucking pro-choice people. I want actual pro-choice, you fuck. I not only, you know, if you want to go be a satanic bastard and kill your baby, I would prefer you didn't, but I'd also prefer you don't pick my pocket to pay for it. It's really quite fucking simple. If you support Planned Parenthood, you should pay for it. If you don't support Planned Parenthood, you shouldn't have to pay for it, period. As far as this whole abortion Alabama thing goes, it seems more, to me, it seems like more smoke and mirrors bullshit. More wounded on the battlefield, more divide and conquer. The crocodile loves to fuck with you. Okay? The crocodile loves to gaslight you, to play little psychological, little mental games. I read an article on Zero Hedge about the submarine where these sailors were keeping lists, rape lists, which is pretty terrible, okay? There is no excuse for that. I was in the military. There is no excuse for making a list of any of your comrades in arms. I mean, listen, if you're on a team like that, you got to do what they got to do. Making rape lists is fucked up. And that's a disciplinary issue. Like, I think if you're making lists of people you want to rape or beat up, I don't care what your motivation is, that's a disciplinary issue. But I was reading about it, and here's the thing. It was submariners, okay? And submarines, come on. That's a fucking hard life, okay? You know, our submarines may be nice, and our reactors may be safer. But living on a submarine for weeks and months on end, it's got to be horrible. And if you're around women in close quarters, holy fuck. I get it, you know, and young people with hormones, listen, they're gonna have sex. I'm sorry. I know that this may be completely shocking to you, but young people in a metal can, hundreds of feet below the surface of the water for weeks on end, are going to have sex. Okay, they will find a place to have sex. It will occur. And it won't necessarily be rape, okay? It'll just be the good old-fashioned, here's a guy, here's a gal, or a guy and a guy, or a gal and a gal, whatever the case may be, and they will fuck. You know, if you don't understand this, if you don't realize that will happen, you're a fucking moron. The best solution to this issue is to say, guess what? There's disciplinary action if you fuck. If you can't control yourself, you're going to get in trouble. That's how you deal with it. You don't deal with it by pretending it doesn't happen. You deal with it by basically, listen, controlling it. That's my opinion. But on the other hand, I don't work for the crocodile any longer, so I don't worry about it. What I do think is that this whole cultural Marxist philosophy that people can be forced into a fucking box. So where I work right now at Willy Wonka's, they are converting the bathrooms. And so eventually, and this is really fucking important, because this gets to that one of those issues for good old Uncle Dan and his ability to work a job. Eventually, the bathrooms where I work will be, you know, unisex or all sex, which means that Uncle Dan could be leaving a dookie in a stall, and right next door could be Aunt Marie, and next to her could be Sclebus, who used to be female and is now male. And they could all be taking shits together. And my opinion is simply this. I would prefer a men's room and a women's room. And if we need a third room for it, fine. Add it. But if you're going to have me dumping my sklomp into the bathroom tube, next to a woman, then she's going to be fucking horrified. In fact, I'll let y'all in a little secret, women. And for all of you people who are transitioning from one gender state to the next, I will let you all in a little fucking secret. The last fucking person you want to be next to in a fucking bathroom pooping is good old Uncle fucking Dan. The shit that goes into my body ain't so good. The stuff that comes out is worse. Probably the reason why I have issues with beans, the French bulldog, is because I'm projecting. Not so, I don't eat my vomit, I don't eat my poo, for reasons that if you saw it would be obvious. But do I produce shit that's as nasty as the shit that beans produces? Probably. So here's a little challenge, and this is how I'll leave this podcast to all you fucks out there who want to join me in the unisex bathroom, who want to pretend that men and women can be formed in some THX 1138 simulacra of a meat tube that just swallows a pill and pushes a button. For all you fucks who want to see Kiosk Jesus or listen to BMW Jesus, if you want to join me in the unisex bathroom, you do so at your own risk. If you are a social justice warrior and you want to join Uncle Dan while he drops a dookie, guess what? I was in the fucking army. I had to poop around women all the fucking time. But my body don't work so good no more. So the kind of poop I produce, the kind you do not want to have to smell. I mean, that's where I'll leave it. You know, in fact, I'll leave it here. We have to be respectful of each other, and I am a Christian, but I try to remember that one of my great sins is judgment. I judge too much, where in fact, it's God's place to judge, not mine. And in my opinion, as an anarchist, as long as you're not harming animals or children, which means you're not having sex with animals or children, as long as your sex is voluntary, frankly, just for issues of politeness and decency, as long as you're doing it behind closed doors, because I don't need to see your junk in the streets. If you're doing that and you're being respectful of your neighbors and practicing your junk magic indoors in private with voluntary people of the adult persuasion, then I'm okay with it. It's your fucking business. It's between you and the people you're having sex with and God. Okay? That's my opinion with respect to that. But when it comes to this issue of forcing everybody, trying to convince people there is no gender, you all can fuck off, okay? You can go to hell. You remind me of the fuckers, you know, the people that would, you know, it's like that professor back in 1990 at the UW who told us all that Marshall Tito, in his years in Yugoslavia, had proven that you can overcome ethnic hatred and remove it from history. It can just go away. I remember that lecture so clearly because a few months later, Yugoslavia started falling apart from ethnic hatred. It's bullshit. It's fucking bullshit. There, you think you can take all of these hatreds and anima and animus and all this shit and all this built-up angst of centuries and pretend it doesn't exist? You think you can remove the sexual politics from reality? You think you can convince men and women to not be men and women? I'm going to let you on a little secret. You're going to have a fucking bad day. And if you fuck with Mother Nature, well, let's just say Mother Nature, and I would say ultimately God, pushes back. So feel free to join me in the unisex bathroom. Feel free to join Uncle Dan in the unisex bathroom and at Willy Wonka's software factory. I will lay my dookies into the bumpus hole, and you will smell the gases and the glimbus as they seep through. And like some Lovecraftian horror story about going into some, you know, deep crypt someplace in some forgotten fucking cemetery, the whiff of green smoke that comes out the fucking side of my fucking stall is going to wake you up, you fuck. Have fun, Mr. and Mrs., all of you, especially you women. Have fun smelling my shit, and have a great day.